A few years ago, Stephen Ranella invited a group of his friends to Montana for a 3-day, 45-course meal. Well, considering the menu, you wonder why they would accept that invitation.
I had skewered elk livers, baby squabs, which is a baby pigeon poached inside of an antelope bladder, bighorn sheep cutlets with a morel stuffing.
Ranella is a wild game hunter and writer who lives in Montana. He became obsessed with a century-old cookbook called Le Guide Culinaire, or in English, The Culinary Guide. Now, this is no ordinary cookbook. It's a 646-page tome written in 1903 by Auguste Escoffier, the French master chef. Ranella was so taken by this book and its meticulous recipes for all manner of game and fowl that he spent an entire year preparing for his feast. He traveled all over the country to find ingredients for the meal.
I had wild boar head cheese, sausage made from pig's ears, a liver souffle, so like a foie gras, but with a actual wild goose's liver.
We should apologize in advance if we happen to ruin your dinner. Ranella documented the experience of preparing his dinner, first in an article in Outside Magazine, and now in a new book. He describes it as a memoir, a cookbook, and a love song to the American wild. But it all began with Auguste Escoffier.
His moniker was that he was the king of chefs and the chef of kings. And he was cooking for a lot of royalty. You know, the Shah of Persia did a lot of work with King Edward. And Kaiser Wilhelm was a fan of his. He cooked for him many times. He's credited with sort of codifying French haute or high cuisine in this 5,012 recipe cookbook. And then after World War I, this style of food kind of promptly fell out of favor.
Now, what was it that caught your attention? Did you love it because you're a gamesman or because you know your way around the kitchen?
You know, I guess it was a combination of both things. I'm an avid cook because I spend so much time hunting and fishing. So when I got this book, I was looking through it thinking, you know, man, it's like I'm one of few people who could go out and find this stuff. This describing this book is just things that you're never going to find in a store anymore. You know, like bladders and fish semen. This is just not stuff you can locate.
So you got your friends to travel cross country for this meal. Did you tell them what you were going to be serving?
Yeah, they all knew. And the thing is, most of my friends that participated in the meal had their lives have been impacted more or less by my search. I took them on trips. They would find things for me and mail them out to me. So most people were involved in the actual acquisition of all the ingredients.
Did you say your friends were mailing you ingredients? What, they were like shipping bladders and sparrows through the mail?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I had the mail service ship things on airplanes. I shipped, you know, about 150 pounds of seafood on an airplane, just checked it as shipping baggage.
And someone on the other end was wondering why their suitcase smelled like.
Oh, I had some disasters, too. You know, I had two eels. Like, I was in New York, and I got these two eels, and then New York State. And I had to fly out for a wedding reception in Billings, Montana. And I was the best man in this wedding. So I get out there, and my luggage didn't show up. And then it's 2 days till that stuff comes in. I go down to the airport. You know, and they're like, oh, yeah, it's over in the corner, you know, and there's my cooler sitting there. I open it up, and the eels were just, you know, just kind of floating in a gray liquid. Like, they were just gone. They were toast. You know, that's kind of sad, and I was really reluctant to let them go, so I wrapped them up, and I wound up just really, really cooking them inside of soup. That was questionable, but I just couldn't bring myself to talk.
Yeah.
You know, so, but, you know, I cooked them so much that anything that was in there would be just dead.
Now, what was the single most difficult ingredient to find and bag?
Well, that's difficult. The thing that one would think would be the most easy was to get a baby street pigeon. When you set out to actually find a little baby pigeon still in its nest, that was frustrating. I did everything from I built an aviary to keep pigeons in, thinking I'd breed them. I hunted pigeons in many downtowns, going into bars and asking bartenders, you know, at midnight or something, if they'd mind if I, like, climbed up to the top of the building. You know, it took me forever. And even when it was all said and done, I didn't have as many as I wanted. You know, I only had four. In a year's time, I had four baby pigeons.
You know, when I look at the menu, Stephen, there's a lot of stuff that seems like it's served inside something, inside a potato, inside a bladder. This is the way Escoffier cooked.
Yeah, I think he put in steps to intentionally make things more complicated. If you're supposed to poach a bird inside of a bladder. You're then not supposed to eat the bladder. So you're supposed to go get this bladder, and then they're not elastic. You know, you have to soak them to make them elastic. So you go through all this trouble, stuff it full of other ingredients, tie it shut. It's very difficult to work with. It's very slippery. You do all this, poach the bird, throw the bladder out, and eat the bird. You know, and I couldn't fathom why some of this stuff was so complicated. I think, one, just presentation. Or like, his clientele, Escoffier's clientele, eating was beyond a hobby for them. It was like a fine art. So things would just be visual, like visual effects were very important. Things that were elaborate for their own sake. And now, you know, people are like, oh, you know, 5-minute microwave cooking or chicken breast in 7 minutes. I mean, I think that they would find that idea repugnant.
So in the end, how was the meal?
You know, the meal was fantastic. And I was in the kitchen just sort of sampling things as I prepared them. But it just blew my mind of all the tastes and textures and smells that are out there that you don't get if you're just living your life by going to the grocery store, going into restaurants. You know, you're just missing out on like 90% of the flavors and smells that are available in food.
Now, your diners actually kept notebooks. They took notes throughout the meal.
Yeah,
and
there's I asked
one
them to
dish that one person described as a little too strong. Another said, just plain, I don't like it, a bit waterlogged. And then someone else said, it's like eating a plant from a swamp. Do you know what I'm talking about?
The liver souffle, yeah. That was really bad. If you could grade it on appearance, it would score very high for the first few minutes after it pulled out of the oven because it was like this kind of golden balloon, you know, it was beautiful. But it just deflated, and it really tasted like liver times maybe 10 or 20. That was a terrible dish.
And then someone said something that I actually can't read on the air, but essentially that's what you get for eating something so blank nasty.
Yeah, I think, yeah. Yeah, because, you know, if you told someone, hey, you want some liver souffle, you know, most people are going to be like, no, I'll pass. And they'd be right. With that dish, they would be right.
Would you recommend that anyone else try to put together a menu like this?
You know, I think that maybe someone would have fun if they decided to do a little meal and have maybe a couple of cool appetizers. But, you know, I wouldn't do it again. It just really, you know, it really took a long time to do it. But I think that just to try little things and just open your eyes up. You know, the next time you see a pigeon, you know, like make a mess on your car, maybe you'll find a newfound appreciation for pigeons if you simmer one in a lemon butter concoction, you know?
One man's view of dinner. That was Stephen Rinella. He's a hunter and a cook, and now he's an author. His book is called The Scavenger's Guide to Haute Cuisine. You can read an excerpt at our website, npr.org.